This episode of Amplified Oklahoma is brought to you by the Oklahoma Oral History Research Program at the Oklahoma State University Library.
When wounded and needing a balm, I pull out the bottom drawer of my mind, marked Oklahoma, which holds a list of small raw towns with names of touching beauty. I recite with reverence, Bowlegs, Depew, Pretty Water, Ida Belle, Lone Star.
When I think of Oklahoma, I think of home. My hometown of Tulsa, my second home here in Stillwater, and of course, Oklahoma State University and my third home, the Edmund Lowe Library. Another person who saw Oklahoma as home was poet Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. Known to her friends in California as the Okie Poet, Wilma wrote more than 50 books of poetry and stories. So, in honor of National Poetry Month, we're going to take a look at her life and work in this episode of Amplified Oklahoma. You'll hear interview excerpts from Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and John Cooper, who shared stories from Wilma's life with Karen Neuroer. Later, Karen and I talk about her time working on her project, Remembering Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel, poet and Oklahoma Dust Bowl immigrant. I'm Iris Owens, and we've got a great episode for you today. Let's get going. Born in 1918 in Lincoln County, Oklahoma, Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel began writing early in her life. Encouraged by her mother, Wilma continued to write stories and poetry about her beloved Oklahoma, even after her family moved to California in the 1930s during the Dust Bowl, where she lived for the rest of her life. One of Wilma's closest friends in California was historian, human rights activist, and fellow writer and Oklahoman, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. She shared with Karen how they met, some of her favorite poetry of Wilma's, and what it was like to be one of Wilma's many, many friends.
When did you first meet Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel?
Well, I met her first through this book, A Prince Albert Wynn. It came out in 1994, and this happened to be in early 1994. And I had started writing these stories that seemed to want to be told. I was calling them Red Dirt Stories. And a lot of those ended up in my book, Red Dirt Growing Up Okie. But I sent some of these to my ex-husband, who's still a good friend, a poet, Acoma Indian poet, Simon Ortiz. He then sent me this book. You would probably really like to meet this poet, and I had never heard of Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. I absolutely was just floored by this. Was the, I think he first sent me a cutout of this poem and said, I'm sending you the book. But this was the first poem of hers I read. It's called Buried Treasure. L.B. Hayes ruined his expensive shoes squashing around the autumn desolation of a sharecropper cabin in Caddo County. Okie boy turned 50, searching for anything that had belonged to his father when he was fighting the Great Depression, kicked at a lump behind the caved-in cellar and uncovered a rusty Prince Albert tobacco can, stowed it away as he would a saint's bones, in his Lincoln Continental and headed back to Bakersfield. And I fell in love. I said, I have to meet this woman.
Since Roxanne lived in California, they spent quite a bit of time with each other. They would write together, and after Wilma lost much of her eyesight to glaucoma, Roxanne would read to her or they'd listen to books on tape. Roxanne was one of the few people to regularly visit with Wilma, so she got to experience Wilma's little quirks and habits firsthand. She described some of Wilma's quirks in her interview with Karen.
She had this graceful movement, almost like she was walking, you know, barely touching the ground, you know, like she's walking on a cloud or something. That she had a very soft walk. Mm-hmm. And approach. I really love that, you know, people who tromp and make a lot of noise and can't go upstairs with a clunk, clunk, clunk. She had this light. She walked lightly on the earth. And I think it was kind of an Indian thing, you know, that light touch. And the same when she touched things, very tactile. in any book, you know, books, like, she caressed the book, mm-hmm. you know, and not just her own, but any book mm-hmm. was a sacred object, you know, for her to handle it with care, you know, and her papers and everything. And we wrote together sometimes. We'd sit at her table, and I would write, and she would write. And it was, my mother used to write, and it reminded me of you know, watching my mother write, because she wrote by hand, and really very clear writing, always with a pencil. Wilma said that she took up a ballpoint pen only a few years before she met me, that she had also written on, you know, lined paper on with a pencil, but she took up writing on scrap paper, anything that came her way, not people's letters, she kept those, but like if she got a flyer, you know, on the door or something, she would use that. All of us who got letters from her, we never knew quite what to expect, you know, the pieces of paper, sometimes little strips of paper. She would write a note, put it in an envelope, and Wilma would cut out these this Wrigley's gum, the aluminum wrapper, and she would make these little people. And each one looked different that she would make, you know, and she would send them with her letters as a little gift. So you felt like this much more than just a little thing, that she just put her heart into it, you know, that it was something really precious. So she had that way with everything was meaningful, had meaning in it. So the kind of rhetoric you hear about, you know, the rocks and the stones and the trees having life, that, you know, sounds a little bit smaltzy, you know, she just lived it.
What did she like to read?
She liked to read everything. She read fiction, poetry, nonfiction. She read classics. She loved hearing over and over Shakespeare plays. She really had a great knowledge of it. She could have taught graduate courses in literature. No pulp anything, you know, for her. She was a connoisseur of good literature. She got a lot of, she couldn't really read them, but people, I read to her a lot, Granta and Pushcart. She loved new writers, reading them, and she got published, of course, in those as well, the small magazine, Hanging Loose, and became friends with the editors. So they all sent her these magazines, and she read new writers, classic writers, loved Hemingway and Willa Cather, and, you know, all the writers also of her childhood, you know, when she was young, these were her contemporaries, yeah. She really, really was a reader. And I think she missed reading. I mean, the experience is not quite the same listening, and she hadn't been a blind person all her life. So it was not as satisfying to her. And I hadn't met her before, but apparently she was a regular at the library. She didn't buy a lot of books. And Hanford had a good library, and I think she helped make it good by the books that she would demand, you know. Mm-hmm. It built up their collection, because she said, why don't you get this book in, you know, so that she was a regular, you know, like reading a book a day.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And that is really the secret to good writing, is reading. And that's, you know, you get your ideas, and a lot of people who try to write, they don't learn that you have to read, you know. You have to love literature, that you can't, it's not a mechanical thing. It's a world you get into. And each writer is unique, you know. So she was that was her life, reading and writing.
Roxanne continues to write from her home in California. During her time in California, she helped to develop the Department of Ethnic Studies and Women's Studies at California State University Hayward, where she taught for many years. Roxanne's memoir, Red Dirt, Growing Up Okie, celebrates its 20th anniversary this year. Her memoir tells the story of growing up as the daughter of a landless farmer and a half-Indian mother, her move to California, and her friendship with Wilma McDaniel. Wilma had a way of making friends with almost everyone she met, and not just friends for the duration of their time together. Wilma was an avid letter writer to every one of her friends and also kept in contact through phone calls. One person she kept in contact with was John Cooper, member of the Red Dirt Rangers. The two met at Dust Bowl Days, a festival in Weed Patch, California, and kept in contact for the rest of Wilma's life. John's first encounter with Wilma was one he will never forget.
When did you first meet her?
I can tell you the exact date. It was October 24th, 1998. We were in, we had taken the band from Oklahoma. We were going out to California to tour. And one of the first shows we played was an event called Dust Bowl Days in Weed Patch, California, which is a mile south of Bakersfield and was an original migrant camp for Okies and displaced people, displaced immigrants from this area, Kansas, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, all through here in the Dust Bowl region. That's where they went to go out there to pick fruit vegetables throughout the central San Joaquin Valley, the Central Valley. So as part of the huge migration of that, of those people, they had to have camps, and this was a place with, in 1998, we were asked to come play. As part of it, Wilma was going to speak and, I guess, read poetry. I don't remember exactly, but she was, I guess, contracted to come out and speak or contacted, and she came as well. And so we hooked up with Roxanne, and she introduced us to Wilma, which was an interesting experience from the very first. She, you know, it was just, Wilma was very plain-spoken and very just, you know, I think she was in a wheelchair at the time, in and out, wasn't she? Walker, wheelchair, she had some aid to walk, but her her manner was very oaky, and she acted like she, you know, there was no real meeting, it was just kind of a picking up and going on from where she talked with guys like us all her life, I'm sure. It was just interesting to talk to her. I met her first, and was talking to her. We came her, she said, well, let's go. I had to go to the stage to start setting stuff up, and so she went with me. And she goes, well, I want to meet the rest of these dudes. I haven't been introduced to them yet. And so everybody introduced themselves. And it was just a very easy meeting. She seemed very comfortable and at home with us. And we did with her as well. The same way that it had been with Roxanne, who we'd met originally. They had both gone to California, but the mannerism and the way they approached people was very easy and open. And that's just what really struck me about Wilma. Just her openness and her just ease of being around people, especially people she knew as from Oklahoma or from this part of the country. There was just a natural affinity that that she put out for those people because we were her people. Her people were here and in California, and she was kind of a mother matriarch figure to a lot of them, including us and anybody else that, you know, came in contact with her. So the initial meeting was very easy and very simple.
Mm-hmm. So what was the festival multiple days then?
It was actually one day. We played for a while, and it was funny to look out into a sea of faces that looked familiar. You know, it just was. We knew those people, and they knew us. And we played for a while, and Wilma got up to speak. She asked if we knew Karina, and Karina, and we said, no, we don't really know it. But she goes, oh, that's my favorite song. And
who was that by originally?
Bob Wills is who I heard it by originally.
It's probably 100 years old.
Yeah, it's probably an old blues tune. But she asked if we knew it. We said, no, we don't. But, you know, it's a great song and this and that. And so she got up to speak and read her poem and introduced us again and said, and now the boys are going to do one of my favorite numbers, Karina, Karina. So we all looked at each other just going, oh boy, here we go, you know? So we launched into it because it's, I mean, we knew the tune, we just didn't know all the words, and Brad knew some of the words. Started in, and our friend and bandmate at the time, Benny Craig, came in and knew the rest of it. So we kind of pulled it off, and it went real well, but that was just a, you know, Wilma wanted Karina, and she was going to have it, and she got it. So that was it.
Did you look at her while you were singing?
She was just kind of there to the side, tapping her foot and enjoying herself. You know, she acted like it was no big deal, like, we should know Karina because we're from Oklahoma and that's the way it is. She was right. We did know it. We just didn't know we knew it.
John also read aloud from one of Wilma's books, Getting Love Downright. The poem he chose to read, titled Pursued, is one of his favorites.
They hang around my life like a mantle, but why should these names follow me from a place where I was wrenched so long ago? I cannot say and will never know why they whisper their Oklahoma names in my ear. Blue Jacket, Atoka, Watonga, Boggy Depot, Shoto, Poto, Rush Springs, Shamrock. And when there is a moment's silence, I hear Kellyville, Tishomingo, Pretty Water, Paul's Valley. Beautiful stuff.
John and Wilma kept up their monthly phone calls until Wilma's death in 2007. John and the Red Dirt Rangers were greatly impacted by the few hours they spent in Wilma's company. As a parting remark, John told Karen that he believes he will carry Wilma with him for the rest of his days, and believes all of Wilma's friends and acquaintances have similar sentiments.
Where you been so long? Corina, Corina, where you been so long? I ain't got no loving since Karina's been gone.
Turn it around.
I ain't got no loving since Karina's been gone.
If this next voice sounds familiar, it's because you've already heard it in this podcast. Karen Newroar is a professor at the OSU Library in Stillwater. I sat down with her to learn more about her oral history project, Remembering Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel, poet and Oklahoma Dust Bowl immigrant.
So what made you want to create this project?
Well, it really stems from the fact that I had never heard of this person, and I absolutely loved her poetry. I loved how she reflected a period of Oklahoma's history that I felt like was lacking in a lot of our history and our education. My career started out in secondary education. I was an English major at Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, and I taught high school English. So I have a strong interest in regional literature and poetry and place. And I thought Wilma just reflected all of that so beautifully, and it was such a unique period in history. I was fascinated that she continued to write about Oklahoma all of her life, even after leaving in 1936.
So did you ever get to meet Wilma?
No, I did not. I would have loved to have met her. I had to get to know her through my oral history interviews and through her writing.
And how did you find the people that you interviewed?
That has been a really fun journey. I had read Roxanne's book probably around 2006, I think. And the following year, an obituary in the Tulsa World Sunday newspaper caught my eye, and it was of Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. There was a picture of her and a pretty large, very well-written obituary. And so that caught my eye again, and I put the two together, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, she's passed away. I never got to talk to her or meet her or anything. I vaguely recalled that a couple of musicians from Stillwater, Brad Piccolo and John Cooper, who are part of the Red Dirt Rangers group, that's their band, that they had mentioned meeting her before or talking to her. And so I got in touch with Coop, and he said, oh yeah, that they had met Wilma and had gone to California, and that they corresponded with her after that one meeting, and they would talk on the telephone frequently. So between them and then Roxanne, they were able to help me get in touch with Roxanne. And from there, it was like a snowball effect, as they say in research, where one person leads you to another person, leads you to another person.
Did you ever go to California to interview anybody?
I did. I went twice. I went to Montana and interviewed an artist there who had met Wilma and really loved her poetry. And then I went from Montana to California and took, I have a map where I marked all of the spots I needed to go visit and communicated with different people and set up days and times to travel and catch some interviews there. But I couldn't get everybody that I wanted to get, so I was able to go back a second time and attain some more interviews there.
After sharing with me everything that went into creating this project, Karen told me some things she learned about Wilma while interviewing her friends and family.
She had a vast correspondence, and in fact, she got to know her mistress delivery person very well, because she was always sending things to be published. I don't think we'll ever have a complete list of every place she ever published. It's vast. I've seen, if you watch, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this documentary, Down an Old Road, The Poetic Life of Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. It's by Chris Simon, who became a friend of mine. And Chris came to Oklahoma for the public programs, and we showed the films. And Roxanne came as well. But this interview and this film footage was, I think, maybe done about 8 years before Wilma passed away. And anyway, it's beautiful, and it shows her, and it shows her writing in her apartment and all of the stacks of places that she published her poetry. You know, what's interesting about Wilma is that she kept her poetry private and close to herself for so long, and she never really tried to publish anything. And then when she moved into her middle years in her 50s, she decided to go ahead and try to share it. And so that whole story's in the documentary too. But once she opened that door to getting published, that became her life, I think, in many ways.
So what was it like getting to know her through the people that you interviewed?
It was really an honor to have the opportunity to meet with these people who knew her and hear their stories about her and get to know her. Her brother was just wonderful, Roy. He's gone now, but he lived in the same apartment complex as Wilma, and we sat in his living room and he shared stories with me. And then at one point he even got out his harmonica and played a little song toward the end of the interview. I don't remember if that was in our recording. It probably wasn't. But he was really dear. And Wilma was interesting because she cultivated, and this isn't an original thought. I heard other friends of hers say this. She cultivated a little community of artists and people that were like her children in many ways. She never married or had children. She never learned to drive a vehicle. And so her world in some ways was small in the respect of being able to travel and go and see and do a lot of different things. But she had these wonderful, wonderful friends who looked after her and took care of her. And she became very dear friends with her publisher, Jim Klebda, who is no longer here. And she had friends in the academic world, and she had everyday friends. But it was really this little family for her. And that's also in the documentary. You can see that very clearly.
I like that. And what has been your favorite Wilma story that you've heard, or just something that you find so fascinating about her?
Well, one of the stories I heard over and over again was how everyone would try to give her paper to do her writing on, like fresh, clean, nice lined paper, and she would not use it. She preferred to use scraps of paper. and backs of letters or junk mail that came in or anything like that. That was her preferred paper. She was very particular about the pens that she used, so she would request that they supply her with pens from time to time.
Karen is also a coordinator of the Literary Landmarks Program, part of the Friends of Libraries in Oklahoma, and worked with others to make the library in Wilma's hometown of Stroud, Oklahoma, a literary landmark. Through book distributions, presentations, and poetry contests, Karen Newroar continues to share the work and stories of Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel. There is so much more to be said about Wilma, but unfortunately, there's only so much room in a podcast. Something I found during the creation of this episode is that many of Wilma's friends believe that her poem, A Pair of Rivers, perfectly defines how her heart was split between Oklahoma and California. And so, to end this episode, I'll leave you with A Pair of Rivers, read by Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel.
Everyone should have a lover, and I had two of them, now locked in memory. At 9, it was the lazy Cimarron, with orange water and huge catfish the color of mud. At 17, I found another in far-off California, a tumbling crystal river with the holy name Merced.
Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz and John Cooper were interviewed by Karen Newroar in 2007 for the Remembering Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel, Poet and Oklahoma Dust Bowl Immigrant Oral History Project. You can view these interviews and learn more about the project online by visiting www.library.okstate.edu/podcasts. Down an Old Road, The Poetic Life of Wilma Elizabeth McDaniel is available from Sageland Media. The documentary, created by Chris Simon, won the 2003 Oral History Association's Nonprint Award. Special thanks goes out to Karen Newroar. We'd love to hear what you think. If you have suggestions or comments, connect with us on Twitter at OOHRP. You can also find the Oklahoma Oral History Research Program online at www.library.okstate.edu/oralhistory. I'm Iris Owens, and I'll catch you next time on Amplified Oklahoma. Thank you.